Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm in North Riding today to talk to Chantel Fraser. Chantel is CEO of Dracor Data Sciences, the company that has been in the news this week over the massive data leak involving the personal records of more than now 60 million South African citizens. Chantel, I know you must be having one heck of a week. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with Tech Central today for a detailed discussion. Hopefully, we can shed some more light about this troubling story. Just to recap, an Australian information security researcher by the name of Troy Hunt, who works for Microsoft, started tweeting earlier this week, I think it was on Tuesday, that he had uncovered a massive data breach involving what he first thought were 30 million odd records of South Africans' personal information. He has subsequently said it's now actually, in fact, more than 60 million records, basically the data on all South Africans, including millions of deceased people as well. Some reports online then claim to have traced the source of the data breach to Dracor, which you have vociferously denied. In fact, you've sent out strong warnings to some websites who published these claims. Our own investigations, together with work done by SensePost, an InfoSec company, and by other parties, then determined that the real leak appeared to come from a real estate group called Jigsaw Holdings, based in Pretoria. And I've seen various media reports quoting executives from that group admitting that they were the source of this leak on their website, which has now been apparently been shut down. First of all, Chantel, before we get into the meat of this, I think it's important to start by asking you all about Dracor Data Sciences. What is it that you guys do? When was the company started? And what is it that you do with data?
Great. Thank you very much, Duncan. Dracor Data Sciences is a data company, and we've got three main core focuses. The first one being data enrichment, second one verifications, and the third one is software development.
What is data enrichment exactly?
Okay, so I'm going to give you a practical example. So in most businesses today that are consumer-facing, you know, businesses across the board are collecting data, it could be in CRMs, and information that really deals with their customers. And, you know, most businesses have got an obligation to stay in touch with their customers over a period of time. And this is very important when it comes to things like customer retention. So all we do from a data enrichment perspective is restore and fix our clients' data about their customers so that they can maintain contact with them. On the flip side, we would also deal with debt collection companies that are trying to establish contactability with debtors. You know, they work on a commission-based model, and unless you can establish contact with a debtor, you know, you don't have a chance to put in place what we call a payment arrangement to collect on those accounts. So that is what data enrichment is primarily used for. On the verification side, there's lots of fraud, you know, that costs companies millions of rands. And we essentially work with the Department of Home Affairs in that regard. And it's all around verifying are you the person you say you are? So number one, have you got an ID number? Was that ID number issued by Home Affairs? What is your correct name? And number two, are you dead or alive? I mean, you will not believe how many dead people apply for personal loans every month and retail accounts. So, you know, once those funds or that credit has been dispersed outside of a company's environment, it places a company at risk, and fraud can cost you millions and millions of rands. So that's what the data component comprises of. And on the software side, if I could use this analogy, we built software solutions that can take very complex business challenges, like one of them being poppy management, and build practical solutions that enable our clients to comply with the obligations that have been set out in the draft regulations thus far.
Okay. So how long has DRECORP been around for, and have you always been in the space? I seem to recall reading a report somewhere in the last 24 hours or so that you were once a credit bureau and that you are applying once again to become a credit bureau. Just take us through a bit of the history of the business.
Okay. So DRECORP Investments was started in around May 2013. In the August 2013, we registered with the National Credit Regulator to become a credit bureau. Now, the reason why we did that was, if you take a look at the National Credit Act, and specifically Section 70, it essentially defines what we call credit bureau information. Now, DRECORP does not hold any credit data. We don't have any credit financial information. But that being said, if you look at past Clause A and you look at Clause B, C, and D, it does say that if you are storing information around things like person's education, ID numbers, employment information, contactability, addresses, you need to register as a credit bureau. So the National Credit Act doesn't make provision for, you know, are you just like a data information bureau or are you a credit bureau? So we decided to make sure that our business would be sustainable into the future and took that step to register as a credit bureau. We were then awarded with our credit bureau license in July 2016. And the format of the DRECORP Investments business was very, very different to what we do in DRECORP Data Sciences. So we did a lot of social media management, digital marketing, and I made a decision to completely change direction in terms of what we were doing and pretty much just focus on the things that I was really passionate about. And those things are, you know, data enrichment verifications and software. And so we started trading in DRECORP Data Sciences. To my dismay, realized that you cannot seed a credit bureau license from one entity to another. And as such, we then submitted a further application to the National Credit Regulator for DRECORP Data Sciences. We received confirmation from the National Credit Regulator that our application had been received. We were given an application number, and around 2 weeks ago, we actually received the last communication advising that we can now go ahead with our independence audit, which is the standard procedure that you have to go through. And these audits really take you through very stringent checks around your data security, the skill set in your business, literally everything from who is doing what in the business, your HR policies, training procedures. So it's a really, really lengthy process. But the bottom line is that it's something that we have to do, because this is the business that we are passionate about, and this is what we do.
So without this license to be a, it is a license, right, to be a credit bureau?
Correct.
Without this license, are you able to operate?
Yes, so we were given the go-ahead that we could continue trading as we are. There was a deadline to say that you had to have your credits bureau applications in by March this year. And we, however, submitted ours in October, to be precise, the 14th of October, 2016. Some of my team attended a briefing session at the National Credit Regulator. And essentially, this was not just around, you know, a meeting with Draco. This was dealing with everybody, every single data company in South Africa that you know, resells data for hosting credit bureaus or does anything around collecting data. So the National Credit Regulator strongly regulates our industry. And, you know, even though we have an application in place, from the day we started in the format of Draco Investments and even now in Draco Data Sciences, we've always operated as if, you know, we are governed by those regulations, and that's how serious, you know, how seriously we take the reputation of our business.
So you've been able to continue to use and manipulate this data under what, a temporary license from the regulator, or what is the framework under which you're actually operating now while you wait for that license?
Under the National Credit Regulator, yes.
Okay, so do they issue a temporary license to you?
No, they don't issue with a temporary license. They just send you confirmation of your application, and they assign what we call a CB application number to you, which ours is CB44.
Okay, and that allows you to trade?
Yes.
Understood. Okay, so
I think just, Duncan, on that point, you know, that day in the room, I think the at the briefing session with the National Credit Regulator, there seemed to be a lot of panic that happened in the room that day, and, you know, lots of data companies and put their hands up and said, okay, so, you know, what now? Do we just stop trading, or what do we do? And the consensus was, no, you carry on trading as you are, but please make sure that your application is in by March.
Understood. Okay. So is this data enrichment type of business a fairly common one, or is it very specialist? How many players are there in this market?
Sure. It's a very saturated market. Data enrichment is certainly not, in my opinion, something specialist. But you do need to make sure that you're working with verified data sources. So that is something that we've worked very hard towards, making sure that our sources are what we call verified data sources. And but the practice of data enrichment is something that, I mean, if you just Google data enrichment, you will see pages and pages of companies that offer these services.
Okay. Yeah. So you talk about verified data sources. Where do you get all this information from, and what are the rules that govern the sharing of that information and what you may do with it?
Okay. So it's a great question you asked, Duncan. So the first one is that when I spoke to you about data enrichment, essentially, you know, the main reason for data enrichment is, number one, to maintain contact with your customers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, from a debt collection perspective, but also to, if you can imagine companies that are developing products, to get a better understanding about who their customers are, so that they can build and create solutions and products that their clients actually want. So verified sources that we use in that regard. So number one, we have been a channel partner with TransUnion. TransUnion is a reputable credit bureau in South Africa, and you know, one of the largest credit bureaus. They pretty much process most of the credit applications that, you know, channel through credit providers, and as such, in my opinion, would have the biggest depth when it comes to, you know, trade line data. And if you think about it, when you're filling in an application form, you know, you're putting on your contact information there and certain information, and that information then gets channeled through. So when it comes to contactability, we use TransUnion. for that purpose.
So do you purchase data from them or do they share it with you?
No, there's nothing for free, unfortunately. Right. It is a costly exercise, and you have to go through, you know, a due diligence process in order for you to be a channel partner, reams and reams of paper from an application perspective. And most importantly, you know, you've got to replicate the, you know, their, let's call it standard operating procedures in your business. So, right. You know, essentially you're a channel partner and you need to respect framework.
Out of interest, do those agreements that you do with the when you purchase this data, do they include specific clauses on how you'll protect that data in terms of encryption and exposing it and all that sort of thing? I think it's just in light of what's happened here with Jigsaw. Are there specific rules that are in place about where you may place this data and how it must be stored?
Yes, absolutely. Look, I don't have the contract on hand with me now, but yes,
Sure. Absolutely,
those clauses would be included in those agreements.
Understood. Okay. So you purchase this data. There are strict rules in place to prevent, say, a spammer from going to a credit bureau and purchasing this information and then sending out bulk emails to people.
Yeah, so that's I'm glad you raised that. So that is not what we do at all. Let me, from a data enrichment perspective, there needs to be what we call an input file. Mm-hmm. So if you can just imagine, let me just say that you were a credit provider. And you had a database of people that owed you money. When you want us to do data enrichment for you, you need to provide an input file. And the minimum requirements on that input file is going to be an ID number, a name, and a surname. And on that basis, we then can update your database. You can't come to us and say, just please, can you give me data? It doesn't work that way. So we can only enrich something that you've provided us. Mm. So we are not a company that sells data so that you can get SMSs all day and that is not our business at all.
Understood. And how does this data enrichment work? Do you have an army of people in a call center who are phoning up all the time and checking details and all that sort of thing? What's actually involved in the process? Is it very computerized?
So we don't, like I said, we use TransUnion for that process.
I see.
And you know, earlier I mentioned, you know, how the data channels through from a credit application perspective. But we do not have anybody sitting and calling and, you know, trying to obtain data from anybody. But maybe if I could just take the, you know, also give you another example of how data is kind of available out in the market. So, you know, when you arrived at my office this morning, you arrived at the reception desk and you had to fill in a register. So just looking at that register, you know, I can say your vehicle registration number, your telephone number, and you signed that form. And essentially what's happened is that you've tacitly agreed to share your information. Nobody, you know, forced you to fill in that information. It was the receptionist, I'm sure, just said, please, would you fill in your details? And you did that.
Although I must say, whenever I get to these desks, and I did it here as well, is I never put in my cell phone number and I never put in my ID number.
I did notice that. So I think just, you know, on top of that, I mean, Duncan, just within 5 minutes, I was able to establish, you know, with freely available information, you know, that you went to Hillcrest High School in Durban. You got engaged on the 9th of May 2015. You've been married since the 3rd of March 2016. You like Boston Terriers. You like Iron Maiden. You like trail running, amongst other things. So, you know, I want to just run you through a little bit of an exercise quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, just going back to that book that you filled in, you know, at reception this morning.
Mm.
And it's just something I want you to think about, because there's a lot of finger pointing happening at the moment.
Right.
And we're not pointing fingers, but really it's just something to think about. So you filled in this register, and I'm sure you would know that these registers are, you know, on most reception desks and office buildings these days.
Yes.
So imagine a building manager starts noticing wear and tear, you know, on carpets in the reception area. So he picks up the register from reception And he takes a look through this. He wants to get an understanding of how many people are walking through his office so that he can make the best choice, you know, in terms of selecting carpets that are going to be most durable. So he leaves his office and goes home for the day. That night, his office is broken into and this register book is stolen. So who is at fault here? The visitor that filled in their details, that tacitly agreed to giving it, the receptionist for asking the visitor to complete the form, the building manager for using the data to make a business decision, or the thief that broke into the office. So just something to think about.
Sure. I must say, I'm personally interested, and I think many listeners to the show are interested, how you managed to get that data so quickly about me. Walk us through the process.
I went onto Google and I typed in your name.
Okay, so it wasn't from the details I entered at the reception area.
No.
Okay.
I've been in the room with you.
Right. So yes. Facebook, probably.
Just typed in your name.
It's amazing what we share on social media, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah, yeah.
So just just like I said, we're not pointing any fingers. It's just something to really think about.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Jigsaw, the company that's been fingered in this leak. You had a relationship with them, or one of your previous subsidiaries, which is now no longer in operation, had a business relationship with Jigsaw at one point or other.
Yes,
I think
that's
about
correct.
3 years ago or so. What was the nature of that relationship? What information did you supply to Jigsaw? And was the data that was leaked through their website originally sourced from Draco?
So, Duncan, we had a relationship with Jigsaw, and it was looking at the contract around 2014. It was a six-month project, and just to explain to you and give you a little bit of background, so this particular real estate company has, you know, been in the market for many, many years. And if you understand, once again, the nature of a real estate business. So an estate agent, lists a property on a portal, okay? And when they're doing that, they're capturing things like a street address and maybe how many bedrooms and bathrooms the property has and the seller's information and the buyer's information. That all goes into some kind of CRM database that the company uses. Now, in my example that I'm giving to you, in a lot of cases, an estate agent wouldn't put down maybe the actual street number, because you pose the risk of other real estate companies seeing what properties are for sale, and that's how estate agents make their money. They get mandates to sell property. So what I'm trying to demonstrate is that in that kind of example, the data wouldn't be complete. Mm-hmm. So you might have a street address and potentially a telephone number, maybe an initial and a surname, and an ID number, which would be, part and parcel of the agreements, that happen going through a sale process. So that's one example. You can also imagine most of the real estate companies have got their own websites where people are going on and putting information in to say, please call me, I'm interested in this, this particular property. And then they would also be gathering information around municipal valuations, so the municipal roles. And it, in most cases in real estate, a lot of the model, the business model itself, is a franchise model. So you have an overarching brand, which is made up of a franchise in Durban, a franchise in Joburg, just as, to simplify it. So each franchise also has that flexibility to go and purchase their own data and source their own data, which then is imported into the same CRM. So over 20 years, you can make the assumption that you're sitting on a massive database. However, it's a partial database. There's lots of missing gaps in it. Mm-hmm. So the project that we engaged with Jigsaw was a data enrichment project to basically fill in those gaps. So one of the biggest challenges that the real estate industry are faced with is customer retention. Because simply maintaining contact with people you've dealt with is something that they just don't have the tools to do this. So a data enrichment project was essentially to fix up the data, fill in the missing gaps so that they could maintain contact. And at the time, you know, they had a really, really senior technical team, great systems in place, and it was really to enable their agents to continuously speak to people across the country, you know, in terms of where their franchises had presence. So that was the nature of the work. We were hoping that after that we'd be able to continuously provide them with updates, because data decays at a very rapid pace. And look, unfortunately, at the end of 6 months, for reasons unknown to me, they never continued using us as a service provider, and I've never ever seen them. Never ever seen them since.
There was a report this morning, I think, in Business Day, saying that they outsourced their IT. And in fact, I forget the name of the executive, but one of the executives from that group saying that, or implying that possibly a disgruntled ex-employee may have been responsible for the leak, which sounds a bit like finger-pointing to me, but there's that report this morning. Chantal, take us through a bit of the timeline of what happened here. So Troy Hunt from Microsoft started tweeting about this, I think, around about 4 o'clock or sometime during the day on Tuesday, looking for tech journalists or others to help him investigate the nature of this this leak. When did you first find out that your name was being dragged into this?
Yes, back to Tuesday. I was actually, driving back from a meeting in Centurion, and I received a call from my office after Mr. Tefo Mahapi had made contact with one of my employees who he quoted.
Now, Tefo Mahapi is editor of a website called iAfrican.
I've never met him. I don't know his profession, but yeah.
Okay.
So obviously there was the question that I first asked my employer, well, who is this person? And, at that stage, Adrian didn't know who he was. I immediately instructed him to please stop WhatsApping and entertaining Mr. Tefo Mahapi. Just please understand, I'm the only director in Draco Data Sciences, and whatever happens in my business, I take full accountability for. So I immediately told Adrian to pass my details, my email address, etc., onto Tefo Mahapi, which he did. And I then received, WhatsApp, copies of the WhatsApps that Tefo Mahapi had sent through to Adrian, and where he basically said, I think your GoVault DB got hacked and all the records available online.
What is GoVault?
GoVault is a product. It's an online trace tool that we developed in around 2014. Okay. So and most data companies have what we call an online trace tool. And essentially, if you can imagine, you're a debt collector, you log onto a system, you type in an ID number, and you can confirm, contactability.
Right.
But it's not just available to, the man on the street. There's a process that you need to go through to apply, but it's a one-by-one search. It's not you can't do bulk downloads or anything in GoVault. So it's just a product. Okay. He then said that, Tefo Mahapi said that he can then email us the database headers, and he wanted confirmation to see if it was GoVault data, and also said that we need to take measures to protect the site.
So there were a lot of similarities, and I know not only Tefo had this information, we were looking at it as well, and Andrew Fraser had been doing the reporting for us. Also saw links between these headers and the information on this, or the headers used on this GoVault database, which at face value initially at least suggested that the data may have come from your company.
Yes, which is Which is understandable.
Yeah.
But you're going to find a resemblance of the headers across most data companies.
Right.
So let me give you an example. If we look at deeds data, just as an example, you have a header called bond amount. So we call it bond amount. And every data company will call it bond amount. Some of us might capture it in small case, some in uppercase, some might put underscores between the two different words. It's a naming convention, but they are going to be similar across every single data company. But the moment we received a picture, a WhatsApp picture of these headers, we immediately started our own investigation. I mean, you can imagine we take these things very, very seriously. And first of all, the name of the table that was on this WhatsApp picture was called master_deeds in lowercase. We do not have a table in our entire data environment that is called that at all. Please also bear with me.
Where would that name come from? I mean, master deeds. Where
it's a table that the database owner would have created in their SQL.
Does the name give us any idea of who it might be? No.
No, unfortunately not.
Okay.
And further to that, all the casing on the table. On the picture that was provided, because just bear in mind, I've still not seen this database, but all the headers were in capital case, where we use lowercase. There were also commands in the actual data table, things like engine, NODB, default char set, was just, you know, technical information or commands that we don't use at all. Also, very importantly, we do not run MySQL in our environment at all. We use Microsoft. So, you know, immediately Mark, that heads up our technical department, confirmed that it is definitely not our database and not even vaguely related. So we returned this information to Tefo Mohapi, which he then responded.
This was all on Tuesday still?
Yes, on Tuesday. This was in the evening. So he's sending me emails and he's sending me WhatsApps. You know, I'm out at dinner and I'm telling the guy, you know, just hang 10. I will come back to you, which we did. And at this point, you know, I'd also got our legal counsel involved because of the, you know, these allegations that we've been made. And despite our confirmation and responding to Tefo Mohapi, he then published the following morning an article with a headline asking the question, is Drake or Data Sciences the source of the data leak? It's caused massive, massive, far-reaching damage. And we immediately started, you know, legal proceedings to deal with that.
What were those legal proceedings?
Well, we will be launching high court interdicts against Tefo Mohapi, and that will happen today. We're happy to keep you posted in that regard. The next thing that...
On what basis will you be launching that interdict?
I would prefer not to go into that detail right now. I prefer my legal counsel to respond to you in that regard.
Okay.
Okay. We then received an email on Wednesday morning at 6:10 from Tefo Mohapi sending us an HTTP IP address. And his email says, please take this down urgently. After a long night of investigation, we found this and it's publicly available. So...
Sorry, what's he referring? Is that from Tefo Mohapi?
Yes, from Tefo.
Referring to, we found what?
He found this data structure online, okay?
Okay.
The table of headers.
Right.
That's basically what he found. So I immediately forwarded it to the head of my technical department, and Mark confirmed immediately that the IP address was owned by Jigsaw. And you know, this is searches that anybody can do, and this is using sites like Whois. Mm. And going on there, you know, the registrant's contacts, and I think this is how, you know, Michelle McCrae has been linked to all of this, is because the registrant contact is Michelle McCrae, Jigsaw Group, 7 Einstein Street. So it's all published there. So we then responded to TEFL and said, we cannot take it down. It doesn't belong to us. It's like asking me to take Nedbank's website down or register, you know, Nedbank website. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. So I then wanted to obviously get in touch with Jigsaw to let them know what had happened, but I could see in the media that they were already, you know, fully aware.
Right.
And when you looked at the IP address and the website, it came up with ERA, which is one of their associated brands. So up until now, we have still never seen this database. We've seen a picture of the headers. We've received the IP address. But I do believe that Jigsaw has managed to take down that IP address. So it certainly wasn't a case of hacking. Somebody's taken that data and put it onto a site that's publicly available. Yeah. Why?
No, it is. I think it's unfortunate that some of the mainstream newspapers have referred to this as a hacking incident, because it was nothing of the sort.
Yes, it's not the case at all. We then... Yeah, so we, you know, from... The last 4 days have been, has pretty much what's unfolded in the last 4 days. And I guess, you know, for us just, you know, reflecting on the last 4 days, you know, I will definitely share with you, you know, some of the lessons that have come out of it. You know, for me, like I said, Draco Data Sciences is my business, and we own, you know, everything that happens in our business, and I will continue to take full accountability. But one of the lessons that we've taken out is to really get a much better understanding about, you know, clients that we work with, and to do more due diligence around our client security measures. You know, don't, you know, assume that they have everything in place, and potentially assist with more guidance there. I definitely think that there needs to be way more education on Poppy. I mean, as we know, Poppy's not in full force yet. I do believe that Draco Data Sciences is ideally positioned, you know, to do this, because we actually started developing a solution around 2 years ago already to assist our clients in ensuring Poppy compliance. I personally have been educating my clients on how to instill the key obligations as set out in the draft Poppy regulations for over a year already. And I'm going to continue doing everything I can to get more of this educational material out into, you know, the market for consumers to understand. You know, yesterday I believe that the media made mention that we were even raided by the Hawks. And
no, in fact, that's, let me jump in there, because okay. That's a WhatsApp that I sent you last night. I heard from a source that says they work in the same office park as you, that the Hawks and or the NPA and or an organization called NCA, I'm not sure who they are, had raided your offices yesterday afternoon. I did see that News 24 reported that the Hawks had said they were going to investigate this data leak. But I had a call from someone who was quite adamant that that these organizations had actually entered your offices and removed multiple documents as well as a server computer. Is that not true at all?
That is not true at all.
And I must just say, I also subsequently spoke to Brigadier Mulawudzi, who's the spokesperson for the Hawks. I spoke to him at about 10 o'clock last night.
Yes.
And he said, he confirmed that there's been no raids in relation to this matter. So I'm not sure where my source got that that information yesterday, but it does seem it was incorrect.
Yes, so that's not true at all. We actually invited the National Credit Regulator, the body, like I said, that regulates our industry, to come and do their own investigation. It started at 2 p.m. yesterday and we ended at 10 past 6.
Ah, right.
The National Credit Regulator were here. They literally, I had two representatives that interrogated me from 2 o'clock till 10 past 6.
Uh-huh.
And while that was happening, My technical team were being interrogated separately.
You invited them here, or they wanted to come here?
I ask that they please make sure that they get here yesterday. I didn't want to leave it a day longer. I wanted them to come and see and do their own investigation.
Did they ask for the investigation?
Yes, they would have. They would have started the investigation, but I didn't want them to wait until next week. Asked them to please.
So this was the National Credit Regulator that came
correct.
Here. And did they leave with a computer and some documents?
They left with their own laptops and their own diaries and books, but none of our stuff.
They didn't take anything?
No, definitely not. They obviously have their own IT specialists, so dug down deep into all our data, did imaging exercises. I mean, they look into everything, but I wanted them to come as soon as possible. So
now we understand why someone thought that there was some other authority here and that there was some sort of raid. That wasn't the case. It was the National Credit Regulator who asked to do an investigation. You asked them to come as soon as quick as possible.
That's
they
right.
came. What did they actually do while they were here? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so they wanted to pretty much know every single thing that, you know, we've done from the start of our business up until, you know, what's unfolded over the last 4 days. They want to understand, relook at all our security measures, understand who we work with, what processes we go through to gain access to that information, how do we store it, all that kind of those protocols. And like I said, you know, we've been through an audit before. We've been granted a credit bureau license before. So we're fully aware of what is required to be a credit bureau. And while we wait for our credit bureau license, we will continue operating in that manner because it's just that's the way you need to operate if you want to play in the space.
Sure. So, in light of what's happened here this week, is there an argument to be made that this industry needs even tighter regulation? This sort of leak is obviously damaging and potentially dangerous for consumers because, as Troy Hunt has pointed out, it can be used for impersonation, for fraud, for all sorts of things. Should sensitive information be like this be better handled? Are there sufficient regulations around it? And should it be given to companies, realtors, for example, who clearly aren't taking proper care of it?
So I fundamentally believe that the education around, Poppy that we anticipate very soon, needs to be taken seriously by companies that and every single company, I mean every example you look at, broadly speaking, is involved in processing of data in some way or form. You know, from that reception book that I spoke to you about this morning, to me Googling you and putting your information into an Excel spreadsheet, it's all over the place. But there are responsibilities that one needs to take around dealing with data. And, you know, for us, it's not a challenge because we've been doing this since 2013. But for people that that are facing or hearing about, you know, the pending Poppy promulgation, it can be quite a daunting and scary exercise. And that's why we, you know, really, really spend a lot of time on educating our clients. But I think... you know, it's one thing hearing about Poppy from a legal expert, but it's like, how do I actually take this information and go and integrate it into actual solutions that can help my people become compliant? And that's the challenge that we've been trying to solve in our software development in the last 2 years. So we will continue on that journey, but, you know, we're one company of thousands and thousands in the country. So, you know, there is only so much we can do from our side. But, you know, I fundamentally believe that it's not our data that has been leaked. However, this trial by public opinion is not about that fact. We are on trial by the public because we collect data. And that is what the underlying motivation is at this moment in time. On that basis, I'm sure you can imagine, I am personally receiving thousands and thousands of emails all day long from people and, you know, consumers in the public domain. I've always maintained...
Saying what?
So requesting, you know, what kind of information do we have about them?
Not related to this incident.
Yes, all related to this incident. Some of them not so friendly, some quite scary, but we won't delve into those now. So on that note, I wanted to just mention that from a proactivity step, what we've actually done is on our website, on the homepage, we've actually placed a link. So again, when it comes to the National Credit Act, mm-hmm. you have to have what you call a formal dispute handling process in place. Now, if you phone me or send me an email and request a copy of your personal information, you have the right to ask me to give you a copy of what we have about you on your database. Mm-hmm. But there is a process that we need to fulfill in order to give that to you to, again, once again, validate and verify you are who you say you are. So that's what we call challenge or dispute handling process. You know, the rules around that can be clarified on the National Credit Regulator's website, which is ncr.org.za, or alternatively on the draycor.co.za website. And essentially, we just want consumers to know that I can't respond to every single email right now, but we are working through as many as we can every single day. But please feel free to make use of that dispute handling process if you do want to see what information we have about you on our database. And that has always been there.
Draycor.co.za. All right. So the POPI Act, where are we with the implementation of that? It's supposed to create, that act creates, if I'm not mistaken, an information regulator.
Correct.
That information regulator is not functional yet, not fully functional yet. The Act has been introduced into law, but it's not been fully implemented. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the Information Regulator's Office is already in existence. And around 3 weeks ago, they did publish the draft regulations for public comment. The moment that happened, we actually just sent an email to all our clients and notified them of this. Mm-hmm. And gave them the option to provide any feedback, concerns, ideas, comments to us that we would be happily willing to collate and present to the information regulator for consideration. We did, however, the minute those regulations were published, immediately went and added into our software what we call Form 4, which is a process to deal with written consent. So we cater for worst-case scenario, and essentially what that means is if I wanted to do business with you, Duncan, and I wanted to continue to stay in contact with you into the future, first of all, I need to be transparent and ask you if I can keep your information on my database and tell you why. So if I said to you, Duncan, I'd like to just keep you, up to speed with what's happening, in the industry relating to the business that we are in, and you said to me, yes, that was fine. I need to get that consent in writing, and that has to be done on what we call a Form 4. Okay, so it's all available to the public on our websites as well. And you fill in that form, and that form needs to be audit trailed and stored. So we've built all of these solutions into our software to make sure that every single consumer-facing business representative can comply with these key obligations. So it's not good enough to say that, well, I didn't read the regulations, I didn't know. There is no such thing as ignorance when it comes to law. And this is why I have made it my business to educate our clients and users on how to use data.
Once the Act is fully implemented and we have the information regulator in place, and as inevitably, I suppose, will happen, there's another major leak of information, what does the POPI Act empower law enforcement, the information regulator to do? What are directors of companies potentially facing that are responsible for a data leak like this?
Duncan, all I can do is quote the sanctions that have been published. And at this moment in time, they speak of penalties, fines of up to 10 million rand and or jail time. So, you know, one again, just back to the reason why I spend so much time educating our clients on Poppy is that it's they are taking this very, very seriously. And, you know, I hope that this has been a big eye-opener and learning for every company in South Africa at this moment in time, you know, to take these things seriously. And, I mean, I don't know about you, but I certainly don't want to spend the rest of my life in a prison cell. So, and that is why we maintain doing things correctly.
Yeah, I do think this incident is actually going to make people realize how serious Poppy is. I think, I mean, certainly talking to lawyers in this space or experts in this, I think a lot of companies have been saying, well, Poppy's coming. Yeah, okay, we'll do something about it sometime. But the fact is, if you have if you have information on your customers and something like this happens, you're going to be held personally liable and you could go to jail.
Absolutely. So you know, don't wait. And people just, you know, keep saying, well, it's okay, we'll have 12 months, you know, to comply. That, you know, they talk about the 12-month grace period. You know, why wait? If you could, if you're especially representing, you know, progressive, forward-thinking brands, you know, even if you are a franchise, you know, it's step up and take ownership and operate as if Poppy was in place now already. Because what it does is it gives the consumers and the customers that you are dealing with peace of mind that you are responsible when it comes to dealing with their data.
Mm. Do you think it is appropriate for victims of such a breach to be notified, not only of the breach, but of the consequent risks and their available options to reduce it?
Yes, I think that is something that should happen. And I think, and I cannot quote, like I said, I'm not a legal expert at all or a qualified lawyer by any means, but I think it actually makes provision that you do, in the case of a breach, you do need to notify the necessary regulators and what we call it, the data subject of the data breach. So absolutely, yes.
Okay. And I suppose in an incident like this, it's quite difficult. I mean, we're talking about more than 60 million records affecting most of the country's population. I suppose the question is, who should do that notification and how? Do you take out newspaper ads? Do you, I mean, is it even possible to try and contact that many people?
I've never seen, you know, the specific real estate company's database. I don't know what it comprises of. I haven't seen this database that apparently the Troy Hunt has. So, yeah, I think, you know, practically you would need to put something out into the press and just maybe make it available and easily accessible for people to get in touch with you. You know, it also depends on how many resources you have versus trying to make contact with, you know, 50 million people. You know, if it is, I mean, it's gone from 30 million to 60 million to 75 million. I mean,
Yeah. 75 million. I haven't seen the 75 million.
Yeah, I saw that this morning. But yes, it's quite a challenge. But I think most importantly, it's just, you know, maintain transparency and just make sure you're available to assist consumers and resolve it.
Okay. Last question. What can South Africans do about this? Their private information is out there. Obviously, the concern is that a lot of the sort of information is used by call centers for verification. You know, I know I phone my cell phone company and they ask me to verify my address and my telephone number or my personal address. And, you know, a lot of that information about me is contained in the leak. So Troy Hunt from Microsoft, who first disclosed the leak, said that, you know, this is precisely the sort of information that can be used for identity theft by criminals. And he also said he was stunned by the scale of it. What can ordinary people do to mitigate against risk now that their details, they have to assume that their details are in the hands of criminal actors?
Duncan, it's, you know, your mind, you can let your mind go crazy with all these, you know, possibilities, but, you know, I don't think somebody even needs your ID number these days if you think about just having your Facebook account hacked, you know, you don't put your ID number into your Facebook account. But I think for what consumers can do is, number one, you know, make sure that when you are signing agreements, and read the terms and conditions, you know, understand what you are accepting and exposing yourself to. And if you do not want to receive communication...
But no one reads the terms and conditions.
Well, you know, now it's time that you take responsibility. Again, not pointing fingers at anybody, but, you know, take ownership of that. And likewise, in return, you know, companies that are collecting the information need to make sure that they use the data for the purpose in which it was collected. So... You know, there are many data companies that fly around and say things like, you know, I've got an opted-in database. And everybody's ears, like, you know, prick up and say, well, that's great. You know, it solves all our problems. There's no such thing as a blanket opt-in. So be wary when you hear of those kind of, you know, deals that it is just too good to be true. So when you are filling in a form, accepting terms and conditions, it's for a specific purpose. And if you feel as a consumer that your data is not being used for the purpose in which you agreed, then you need to have that conversation with the company that you have a relationship with or are doing a transaction with. But it's going to take some time, you know, for all of these things to happen. I mean, just as an example, the Direct Marketing Association of South Africa has got what we call a do not contact list, the national opt-out list. So, you know, if you go onto their site, you know, the first paragraph on that opt-out option says, you know, things like, please just bear in mind, if you do opt out, first of all, the do not contact list is only used by companies that are registered members. Draco Data Sciences is one of them. But over and above that, think about the consequences of you opting out of everything. So what happens if you actually did want to know about, you know, a cheaper bank account as an example, or, you know, something happening around crime in your area? You know, nobody can contact you because you've said, please don't reach me at all. Mm. So
I think a lot of consumers are really concerned about how their information is being shared. I mean, I get an enormous number of spam SMSs, emails, you know, even robot phone calls from companies I've never dealt with and never given my permission to use my information. And some of these companies are supposedly reputable major South African companies, and yet I'm still getting the spam. Has there been a bit of a cowboy attitude in this industry prior to Poppy? Do you think companies have had a lax attitude to sharing data up to this point? And why are consumers getting so much spam when they haven't given the permission to these companies to market to them, for example?
Yeah, so it, you know, I'm not going to point any fingers at all, but I absolutely agree with, you know, a lot about what you're saying. And, you know, one of the things is that I think in some aspects you've got like one school of thought where it's, well, let's send as many of these messages out now and with, you know, the intent of seeing how many opt-ins or consents, you know, we could get. But I don't know about you, but I mean, if I look back in the last 5 years, there has not been one spam email or one spam SMS that I've actually responded to and said, hello, I'm Chantel, please can you put me on your database? So I think that companies need to start understanding that that is not how you're going to get consent from consumers.
In fact, I actively will not deal with those companies. With these robocalls I get.
AVMs, yes.
I, you know, I hear the name and I consciously make a note in my mind, I'm not going to deal with this company because they're spamming me without my permission.
Yeah, it's very annoying. But I think when people ask me these questions, so when clients ask me these questions, I explicitly say to them, and exactly like I've said to you now, you know, I don't even say in the last 3 months or 6 months, I say to them, how many emails or SMSs have you responded to and said, hello, please put me on your database? And they all respond very quickly, no ways. Mm. And quite frankly, the companies that make the effort and pick up the phone and start building a personal relationship with me have got a way stronger chance of me wanting to stay on their database and continue, you know, building a relationship with them. So, you know, there is no silver bullet. You need to take the time and start investing into these personal relationships. And then the other school of thought is, well, right now Poppy's not in effect, so, you know, we just have to make sure that we give you the option to unsubscribe. And again, I'm not pointing any fingers, but if it was me, I would be acting as though Poppy was in place already. Mm-hmm. And purely to make sure that consumers feel that you are taking the legislation, pending legislation, seriously. And you have an opportunity to start building rapport with consumers.
When will Poppy be in full force?
Duncan, I can't answer that question. I don't know a definitive date.
But in light of what we've seen this week, I'm sure consumers are going to be hoping that it's sooner rather than later.
Yes, so do we actually. And I think everybody's anticipating it coming through in the first two quarters of 2018. But I really am not in a position to give you a conclusive date. I have no idea.
Chantel, thank you so much for your time on the Tech Central podcast today. I think we've taken the story forward meaningfully, so thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Chantel Fraser is CEO of Draycourt Data Sciences.
Thank you.